Twisted Roots by A.G. Parker. Read by A.G. Parker. Hello, my twisted lovelies. Once again, we have got the wonderful background sound of raindrops on the shed roof. So I will do everything I can to ensure your listening experience is as smooth as possible, and I hope you enjoy. Chapter 11. Life is sweet. Life is also very short. Natalie Merchant. The next morning, the attic was dredged, and Layla's dad appeared with dust-coated bags and a pair of cases. Socks and underwear and sandals were thrown in from great heights and grimaced at in their shambolic bundles. The routine of holiday brought with it echoes of excitement, and shortly behind that, guilt. Both Layla and Elliot accompanied Jacob to pick up a selection of his things, the three of them driving the solemn route through the woods without the disturbance of words. It was as though arriving at an unfamiliar destination. Each took a moment to steel themselves before leaving the safety of the van and making their way up the paving stones to the house. Inside, the air was caked with a sour blend of stale smoke and wine-soaked morning. They picked their way through the jetsam, glass from broken bottles mingled with shattered photo frames, forgotten meals turned ashtray for ground-in cigarette butts. A shirt, crumpled but placed carefully across the arm of the sofa. And a belt, its leather worn and scuffed, its buckle cold and heavy. Jacob's eyes rested on each object. It felt too open, his home life too plainly laid out for Layla and Elliot to look at. And he wondered now at how much worse it felt than the jokes he'd made over cigarettes to his friends. But perhaps they didn't see what he saw. Perhaps it wasn't all spelt out as obviously as he thought. And all they could see was an untidy house, each individual crime or indecency blurred into a blanket mess. He caught a sideways glance at Layla and knew at once that wasn't true. Her face showed the connection from bottle to belt, and he felt sick that all his inner life stood naked around them. He walked on. At the foot of the stairs, he found the light switch and trailed his fingers along the handrail as he ascended, the chips in the white paint stretching like open mouths growing progressively wider as he neared the top. He felt his heartbeat quicken, even as he tried to avoid looking at the entrance to his parents' bedroom. He forced his legs to move past it to his own room, keeping his eyes fixed on the puckered carpet. He slogged his schoolbooks out onto his bed and stuffed a collection of underwear and clothing into his bag, managing not to think as he did. When he was done, he slung the backpack over his shoulder and walked along the landing. Elliot had followed him up the stairs and was stood in the main bedroom's doorway, trying to appear relaxed. He put his hand out as Jacob tried to push past him. "I'll have to," was all he had to say for Elliot to lower his arm. And then he was there. The sheets had been changed, although Jacob doubted his mum had slept there since his father's death. There was no sign that spoke of what had happened, no blood or remnant, and when Jacob paced the carpet, the bed didn't jump at him. It remained steady, normal, not the scene of his father's suicide at all. The chest of drawers where his mum hid her cigarettes and booze money was the same. The curtains, the walls. Nothing changed, yet everything altered. He circled the room once more, taking it all in, feeling miles away from his body, and then left. They departed the same day. Layla's hand was raw from the fire the night before, and she tried to hide the bandages with which she'd covered it with the pulled-down sleeve of her jumper. Jacob soon found sleep, with ear and cheek flattened into the glass of the window. Layla sat in between the others and gazed at the road ahead, lulled by the van's steady thrum. She longed to be able to tell Jacob what was happening, even tell her father, but that wouldn't be fair. And they'd never believe her. In sporadic moments, her chin would drop to her chest as she dozed off, only to reawaken with a jolt and a renewed tugging of her sleeve. If her father noticed these panicked scrabblings, he asked no questions. Grief brought blind spots. They sped past stalls of fruits and flowers on lampposts. Buzzards spiralled, each background blurred into the next. Dirt-grade walls became tree-lined roads, and they, in turn, opened out into vast green spaces where the sun alighted onto every blade of grass and coloured the wings of soaring birds with rainbow fire. Rain sped down as they approached nightfall and their long-awaited destination. It splashed and hammered on the roof of the van and soaked away the caked dust and dirt of the city's smog and country lanes. All around, puddles formed, giving the appearance at times of it being a great black river that they traversed, rather than a road. Street lights were scarce now. The only light was the moon's waxing crescent, her wolfish grey grinning lopsidedly at the stars and the vast world below them. Layla felt safe, secure in the knowledge that the witch wouldn't strike until the new moon, and the revelations of the previous week gave her a sense of hope. More answers would help her save the village. Houses were passed with less frequency, and only the occasional yellow glow of headlights ruffled the darkness. The road turned to track, horned with lumps of compressed dirt that popped out and marked the verge in speckled patterns, or crumbled under the weight of the spinning wheels. The land began to drop away at either side, descending into a deep gorge on one and a lush, tree-flooded valley the other. Under the moonlight, the track was pale, flowing down like a river over the black hills, then rising up toward the shining stars. Miles of hills and roadside were left behind, abandoned to their musings. They rounded a bend, Layla's father hunched over the steering wheel to squint ahead. Its path descended once more before climbing up and thinning out into nothing more than a bare smattering of hard earth amongst the green either side, and at the peak of the hilltop stood a house. It reared over the land and water with a haggard stoop. Layla's heart pounded through her chest as she thought of the hearth-tender's words. As they closed in, she examined her aunt's home. A squat, rounded lower floor gave way to a thin tower, stretched 40 feet above the land. It appeared to rest on a bulky second story on one side, as though it needed to lean on it for support. Atop the tower, glass-filled walls sloped up to a point. The crown of the lighthouse. Its face eyed the crags that surrounded it, and its back looked over the bubbling cauldron of sea with undiminished pride. In an alcove in the mound of earth, a garden thrived amongst the wilderness. Tender trees waved their welcome in the darkness. Layla picked these out and whispered to her father in wonder. Their appearance, so incongruent with the setting, mirrored the fragility of the house. Elliot parked the van in front of the dry stone wall. The rain dropped heavy on their heads, but the taste of salt filled their lungs and spoke to their bones, and the travellers perked with the cold of the rain's touch. They huddled beneath the porch and waited as Layla's father tapped on the wood, the rain driving in sideways sheets and soaking the door. Minutes went by, and the three shivered in the wet landscape. And then, above them, a light went on, casting an amber radiance in the recess. The door flung backwards and the smell of bread and burnt wood crashed into the damp night. Aunt Lorna struck a wild picture in the entranceway, streaked hair and billowing shawl as though a horde of imps danced below her arms. Layla noted the long, straight wooden staff of smoothed ash that Lorna gripped in one hand as though, despite the appearance of bright strength and energy, it was the only thing keeping her upright. "My darlings, come in!" With her beaming face and radiant warmth, she was almost impossibly different from the Lorna of the fire image. She ushered them inside, brushing onto the floor the droplets that had settled themselves on shoulders and backs. "Come by the fireside, warm yourselves. Dinner's in the oven and water's hot, ready for baths." She turned her bright, glinting eyes to Jacob and leaned her weight over her walking stick, causing the firelight to dance across her cheeks. "You must be Jacob. Lovely to meet you. Lorna." The rain battered the roof and windows, but the glow of the fire and the abundant flickering candle seemed to guard the inside of the house from the lashing torrent and chill. Jacob, freshly washed and dressed, returned and curled up on the sofa. Layla followed suit and sat by the fireside on the sheepskin rug next to the cat, who stretched and slunk around her shins before bounding up to Jacob. It nuzzled at him with its grey head, twisting and pushing its face into Jacob's hand, and then stared up at him unblinkingly with huge, ocean-still eyes, when Jacob's hand hung unmoving from the cushions. Lorna turned. "He's magic, that cat. Always knows when I need a cuddle." warily at first, Jacob fingered the soft fur around its neck. The cat promptly leapt up and wound itself into a ball in the curve of Jacob's stomach, purring. "Thanks for taking us in, Lorna," Elliot sighed. "It's been a long month. We really appreciate the break." "And I appreciate the company. It's a beautiful world from this vantage point, but it can get mighty lonely for a person." The cat looked up with narrow eyes. "Anyway, who's up for some homemade pie? Everything's fresh from the garden." She flapped an oven-gloved hand as steam rose out of the oven, sending the aroma of pastry wafting out into the house. Layla couldn't shake the thought that this Lorna seemed a little too perfect, and the sounds and smells of the lighthouse too comforting. "There's no ceremony here, loves. It's self-serve. Come and dig in." Lorna plonked the steaming oven dish onto a cast iron trivet next to a stack of plates. Layla waited until the others had served themselves and then piled a plate high with pie and greens, her hunger overriding her suspicions, relishing the way the steam seemed to soothe her tired eyes. As they ate, she studied her aunt from across the table, taking time to note the further wrinkles and greys that adorned her appearance since the memories in the hearth's fire. There was something in her eyes, too, although she couldn't place it. It was a something that waited, crouched. Not yet unkind, but with all the desperation that hinted that it could be. She wanted desperately to ask her aunt about everything. She needed to. But how? When her father and Jacob were here and everything was already so steeped in chaos and grief. Elliot broke the silence. Jabbing his fork at the food, he said, "Oh, this is delicious, Lor." Lorna turned, not to Elliot, but to Layla. "If you look after the land, she'll provide you with all that you need, and more." She winked. By the time the china of the plates resurfaced, the moon had taken her place high in the sky. She presided over the oddly shaped house on the edge of the cliff and watched, amused, as the wind buffeted and the rain caressed with fervent ardour the slick black of the roof. Inside, the children were yawning, and their eyes found the path to sleep an irresistible one. They allowed themselves to be led from the table to bed. "I've set you two up in the lantern room. It's not fancy, but it'll suffice for now." Up the stairs they spiralled, wending their way past landings and passageways until they reached a small room at the uppermost point of the tower, Lorna seemingly untroubled by the effort of climbing, while Layla, still not fully recovered, found herself panting and the muscles in her legs burning. Its walls, snowflake white, held their curves around several arched windows, looking straight out into the black night and the endless stretch of ocean. The rain strummed her sweet refrain against their panes and sent splashes bouncing off the outer window ledges into the water, land, and roof below. Two beds faced the stairs, their heads by the outer walls, their bodies lined with thick, soft bedding and pillows. On the opposite wall squatted a chest of drawers, and next to it, a desk. Between the two sides, partially covering the wooden boards, lay a rug, its thick tapestry in parts worn bare but still generous in its colour. Lorna walked the few paces across the room, the wooden stick striking the floor every other step, and lit a candle in the alcove of each window above their beds. "I've left the glass bare, no curtains here, so expect to be awake with the sun." She was slowed now, as though the trilling Lorna of earlier had been an act, and now, in the dark, she could shake off a little of that pretense. "Good night, my sweethearts." She smiled indulgently at them and descended the stairs, leaving Layla and Jacob surrounded by the night sky. They listened to the receding beat of the walking stick, sank sleepily into their mattresses and stared. Above them, white clouds brilliant against the black velvet night, sped past, offering fleeting glimmers of stars. They saw now that the whole pointed dome of the lighthouse was bare glass, save for a metal ball in the centre. The barrier between them and the night was thin and clear, casting them into the infinite deep of the sky and her charms. Layla lay awake for some time, watching the scudding and twinkling and beaming of the celestial dancers, but it was Jacob who lost himself up there, in that space, that vastness. He let his hurt melt into the endless, and when he did eventually sleep, it was quiet and dreamless. Lorna retraced her steps back to the ground floor. The firelight had dwindled and the shadows had crept further from their corners. The remaining glow was thrown out onto the sofa and the figures seated upon it. Elliot had moved and was lying back amongst sunken cushions with his feet up on the low table and the cat purring with contentment on his lap. They looked up at her as Lorna allowed the final stair to creak under her step. Elliot's lined face beamed. "This cat is incredible, Lor. I swear his fur's changed colour since we got here. What's his name?" Elliot asked as he scratched behind the creature's ears. "It changes," she said. She glanced at the clock on the driftwood mantel. "You could probably call him Midnight." She tightened her grip on the hardwood in her hand and felt about in the dark for throwaway conversation. Instead, something too big, too laced with feeling emerged. "Elliot, I'm sorry I stayed away for so long. I found it too painful to see you and Layla. I couldn't stop thinking about Vi. I was driving myself mad and..." "Hey, it's okay," Elliot murmured, getting up. Lorna felt his hand on hers as though it burnt through years of ice. "It was a hard time for all of us, Lor. You did what you had to." Lorna felt something in her heart break a little further and hoped Elliot would misread the pain on her face for that of uncomplicated grief. She turned away, letting his hand drop, and began fussing at the cat's cheeks. "Shall I put another log on the fire?" he asked. Lorna examined his voice for a trace of suspicion, then shook her head, collected herself. "No, thanks. I think I'd better get some sleep." Elliot yawned and stretched. "I should too. Did you say I was on the second?" He smiled warmly at her, and Lorna felt herself condemned. She found the nerve to plaster a smile on her face and look him in the eye. "I'll show you up." "No bother. I know the way." He bent and kissed the top of her head as he walked past her to the stairs. "You get yourself some rest, Lorna. You've been an angel to us all. We can't thank you enough." Lorna's smile grew weak once more, but she managed her feeble, "Good night." She watched Elliot's back as he ascended the stairs, his broad shoulders disappearing as the steps spiralled into the dark. "Hey, you," she turned to the cat. "Go see he gets himself some good rest, eh?" The cat eyed her suspiciously. "I know," she said. "I promise I'll get to bed soon." Midnight rubbed his head affectionately against her knuckles and then slunk dutifully after Elliot up into the silent tower. For a moment, before she became aware of the faint mutterings of the night, a relaxed hush pervaded. Lorna peered toward the upper rooms and landings of the lighthouse and listened. All seemed quiet, calm. Then she turned her back on the stairs. She placed her staff carefully against the wall and, standing on the lowermost step, spread her hands wide and slow in front of her. There, in the gloom, an archway formed. The stitching around its edges looked frayed, Lorna thought. Time for a repair. She should do something about that soon. At her feet, where the living room floor usually was, the familiar steps of cold stone emerged, leading her down into darker depths. She picked up her staff, flicked a hand and extinguished the flames in the fireplace, and descended through the doorway, sweeping it closed behind her. End of chapter 11. Twisted Roots was published by Wild Wolf Publishing and is available on Kindle via Amazon or as a downloadable PDF via my website. The links for both of these are in the description of this podcast. You can follow me on social media at twisted_roots_agparker or a_g_parker on Instagram. Please head to my website for other details and to keep updated with my poetry, performances, fiction, articles, and more. I hope you enjoyed listening to this latest chapter of Twisted Roots and that you tune in next time.